Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
The suicide attack in Istanbul that killed at least 41 people is the latest in a series of deadly terrorism strikes to hit Turkey. Tuesday's attack at Atatürk International Airport also wounded more than 200 people. Istanbul's governor said at least 10 of those killed were foreigners. Three suicide bombers entered the airport's international arrival area and began shooting people before setting off explosives. Officials announced Wednesday that the airport had fully reopened. Turkish Airlines said it restarted all operations and flights resumed between the United States and Istanbul. No group has claimed responsibility for the attack. But Turkish Prime Minister Binali Yildirim said early evidence suggested that it was the Islamic State group. He called the attack cowardly and promised to keep up Turkey's fight against extremism. Unity will be the best answer to terrorists, he said. The Islamic State group was blamed for two suicide bombings in Istanbul earlier this year that targeted foreign tourists. Many people have been killed in Ankara and Istanbul in bombings carried out by both Islamic State and Kurdish rebels. The Kurdish rebel group PKK has been known to carry out suicide bombings. However, it usually targets government security forces. This month, the group attacked a police bus, killing 11 people. The recent attacks underscore the sharp increase in recent terrorist bombings in Turkey that have killed hundreds. Some of the attacks have been blamed on the PKK, while others have been attributed to Islamic State. Terrorism experts say Islamic State is believed to have many fighters who are Turkish nationals. They also suggested that recent Islamic State defeats in Iraq may have led to Tuesday's airport attack. The Institute for the Study of War predicted an increase in Islamic State attacks in Turkey during the Islamic holy month of Ramadan, which ends July 5th. The Institute said Islamic State appears to be using Turkey to help develop a larger plan in the area. ISIS will likely select targets in neighboring states that relieve pressure from the group in Syria while setting conditions for future expansion in those states, the organization wrote. Targets that serve this dual purpose include foreign tourists, state security forces, and U.S. military elements in Turkey and Jordan. Another regional issue affecting terrorism in Turkey is Syria's civil war. Armed groups roam along both sides of the 804-kilometer Turkey-Syria border. Turkey has been accused of permitting foreign fighters to cross the border to join groups like the Islamic State. The civil war has also led to an estimated 2.5 million Syrians now living in Turkey. This has strained government resources and caused anger among the Turkish population. Turkey was once seen as a bastion of stability in the area, with a strong economy and tourist industry. But last year, tourist arrivals fell by one-third. The increase in terror has led to increasing uncertainty about Turkey's economic future and its national security.
The United States government is increasingly using social media to investigate people who may represent a security threat to the country. The latest example comes from the Department of Homeland Security's Customs and Border Protection Office. It wants to ask foreign visitors to provide information about their accounts on social media sites like Facebook and Twitter. An optional or non-required question would be added to the form that people must complete before entering the United States. The form asks information like the person's name, phone number, and countries they have visited since 2011. The proposed social media question would only concern travelers who do not need a visa to enter the United States. Travelers from 38 countries are permitted to enter the U.S. without a visa. The Customs and Border Protection Office said in its proposal that adding the question would affect about 24 million people. There is a 60-day comment period for the public to share their opinion about the proposal. U.S. lawmakers have also proposed bills concerning the use of social media for researching possible terrorism links. Senator John McCain sponsored a bill that would require the Department of Homeland Security to look at internet activity and social media profiles of anyone seeking entry to the United States. Senators Martin Heinrich and Jeff Flake sponsored a bill that would permit the Department of Homeland Security to search open source information, including internet and social media postings, of people applying for a visa to enter the U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer has proposed a different plan to help officials search for possible terror links. He wants to reward people who send officials terrorism-related information from social media posts. Anyone whose information leads to the arrest of someone planning an attack in the U.S. would be paid money. Schumer's proposal would make use of the Justice Department's Rewards for Justice program. Schumer said that investigators need the public's help. Schumer said he wants to award people who come forward with information anywhere from $25,000 to $25 million. In the House of Representatives, Congressman Stephen Fincher proposed a bill that centered on stopping prisoners from becoming radicalized. His bill would require volunteers in federal prisons to provide their social media accounts during their background investigations. Fincher called U.S. prisons a breeding ground for Islamic radicalization.
Volkswagen's emissions cheating will cost the company at least $15 billion in the United States alone. On Tuesday, the U.S. Department of Justice announced that Volkswagen would make the largest ever automobile buyback offer in U.S. history. Reports that Volkswagen had cheated on emissions tests in the U.S. first came out late last year. Investigators found that the German automaker had installed software in its vehicles that produced false test results. It would reduce the car's pollution levels during testing, so the vehicles would wrongly pass U.S. pollution tests. Owners of about 500,000 Volkswagen automobiles in the U.S. will now be able to sell their vehicles back to the company for a fair price. The owners will also be paid up to $10,000 each. The carmaker will also pay about $5 billion for U.S. programs that promote no-emission vehicles and reduce air pollution in general. The Volkswagen cars involved created 40 times more pollution than is permitted in most U.S. states. The scandal affected 11 million vehicles worldwide. Volkswagen must repair or buy 85% of the cars by June 2019, or else it will face more punishment. The settlement resolves the largest class action lawsuit in U.S. automotive history. But the legal process is not yet over. Volkswagen and the Department of Justice have not decided what to do about the 85,000 other VW vehicles under investigation. Volkswagen also produces cars sold under the Audi and Porsche brands in the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Gina McCarthy said the most important thing is getting VW's vehicles off the road. In a statement posted on its website, Volkswagen said the settlement is not an admission of liability. In other automotive news, the Japanese car company Toyota Motor Corporation announced a recall of over 3 million vehicles. Toyota says some cars have faulty airbags and failing emissions control units. The cars under recall are the Prius, Corolla, and Lexus CT200H models, produced as long ago as 2006. The recall is not linked to the Takata company. Takata is an airbag supplier responsible for recent recalls by many car companies. Airbag problems have affected over 100 million vehicles around the world. I'm Ann Ball.
This is what's trending today. Pat Summitt led the women's basketball program at the University of Tennessee for 38 years. Summitt started coaching the university's women's team while in her early 20s. 2 years after being named head coach, she was co-captain of the United States women's basketball team. That team won the silver medal at the 1976 Olympics. She later won a gold medal as the U.S. team's coach. Summitt was one of the most influential and successful college basketball coaches ever. Her University of Tennessee teams won almost 1,100 games and 8 championships. Many of her players went on to become coaches or to play professional basketball. Pat Summitt died on Tuesday. She was 64 years old. 5 years ago, doctors found she had early-onset Alzheimer's disease. Americans have been reacting to her death. President Barack Obama released a statement. It said, "She outworked her rivals, made winning an attitude, loved her players like family, and became a role model to millions of Americans, including our two daughters." In 2011, Pat Summitt announced that she had the disease and planned to retire from coaching. She left her position a year later. Summitt got her start in sports before the United States had laws requiring women and men to be treated equally in school sports. Sometimes she and her players would sleep in another team's training area before a game because they did not have money for hotel rooms. But her success could not be ignored, and women's basketball is now one of the most watched college sports in the U.S. Kara Lawson played for Pat Summitt at the University of Tennessee. Lawson went on to play professional basketball and won an Olympic gold medal. Her reaction to Summitt's death was simple. She wrote, "Gutted. I love you. Thank you." Tennis great Billie Jean King broke gender barriers during her career. She wrote, "Pat Summitt was an all-time great with a brilliant mind, a love of basketball, and a deep loyalty to all around her." Abby Wambach was a star on the U.S. women's soccer team for many years. She called Summitt a hero of mine. Becky Hammon is an assistant coach with the National Basketball Association's San Antonio Spurs. She called Summitt a true pioneer and one of the greatest of all time. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Earlier this month, Apple announced new technology at its yearly Worldwide Developers Conference. In the last personal technology report, we talked about the changes to Apple's iPhone and iPad operating system. Today, we will discuss changes for Mac computers, Apple TV, and Apple Watch. We will also report on other news from Apple at the WWDC. The operating system for Mac computers is getting an update and a new name. Mac OS X is gone. Now it is called Mac OS. This year's version of the operating system is called Sierra. The Mac computer will connect more with other Apple devices so tasks can be shared among devices. No more need for passwords to unlock your Mac. Auto unlock will let you log into your Mac computer from your Apple Watch. Universal Clipboard will let you cut or copy on one device and paste it onto another. This works for text, video, and images. iCloud Drive will let users access their Mac desktop from another Mac computer and their iPhone. A new picture-in-picture feature will let users watch a video in one window and have another window open on a Mac. The video can be dragged to any size and position. Siri, Apple's voice assistant, is coming to Mac computers. Click the Siri button and ask it to find files, answer questions, play music, and send messages. Sierra Mac OS will be available for public testing in July. You can sign up at beta.apple.com to be a tester. The final version will be available as a free upgrade in the fall. Owners of Apple Watch will get the Watch OS 3 update to make the Watch apps work faster. Watch OS 3 is set for release in the fall. Apps will now open from the Watch without having to connect with an iPhone. Apps will load immediately with information available when the app opens. Favorite apps will be stored in the Watch's memory and will update in the background to give current information when those apps are opened. Users will also be able to write on the screen with a new feature called Scribble. Write letters and they will be changed to typeface. Scribble works in English and Chinese. New watch faces were announced at the WWDC. Changing watch faces will be easier. A new SOS feature lets users place an emergency call from the watch by pressing and holding the side button. The watch will recognize where the user is and call the right number for that country. So it will call 911 for emergency services in the U.S., 999 in Hong Kong, and so on. Watch OS 3 also has a relaxation feature. The Breathe app supports deep breathing exercises. Users can set the amount of time they want to do the breathing exercises. The watch can tap the user to help set a breathing speed. The app also shows the user's heart rate. Wheelchair users will be able to measure their activity with the Apple Watch. Apple worked with experts to track activity of wheelchair users. Reminders will be changed to time to roll instead of time to stand. Apple TV will get an update to its operating system this fall. Past versions of Apple TV had 80 channels, but the latest version has over 1,300 channels and 6,000 apps. Siri will search across apps for movies, TV shows, and YouTube videos. tvOS will permit users to sign in once instead of signing in for each paid subscription app. Single sign-on also shows all of the apps available on Apple TV. The remote app on the iPhone will be available to have all features that the Apple TV remote has, including Siri. You will be able to use your iPhone as a game controller. Swift, a coding language for apps that run on Apple devices, will be easier to learn with a new app from Apple, Swift Playgrounds. This app is designed for iPad and helps people learn to write code with Swift. I'm Marcia James.
Movies and television with superheroes are popular all over the world. Both young people and adults love characters like Batman and Spider-Man. But for some people, such characters and their stories are more than just simple entertainment. Every year, cities around the world hold events for people interested in superheroes, science fiction stories, and the world of make-believe. These gatherings are often called comic book conventions or comic cons. Two of the biggest comic cons in the U.S. are held in San Diego, California, and New York City. Until recently, Washington, D.C. was among the cities in the U.S. without its own big event for superhero and science fiction lovers. This all changed in 2013 when AwesomeCon first arrived in Washington. Ben Penrod has loved comic books, science fiction, fantasy, and all things nerdy throughout his life. Growing up in Annapolis, Maryland, Penrod worked in a store that sold comic books. He says this made his interest in nerdy media grow.
From there, it just became an obsession, and I started making more friends who were into these types of things.
Penrod bought and sold large comic book collections in his free time. He would often visit a store called Third Eye Comics. He then became friends with the owners. Together, they decided that Annapolis needed its own comic book convention. So in 2011, Penrod and his partners organized the first AwesomeCon in Annapolis. Over 7,000 people attended.
It was larger than anything I had ever done before, and it was scary, but it was also exhilarating.
Penrod says these gatherings are a place people can come to share interests that may be considered non-traditional. In addition to comic book lovers, fans of video games and professional wrestling attend the event. Artists and creators of comic books and similar media come to comic cons to share their work with the public. Actors from movies and television shows come to meet their fans. Many people also wear costumes to look like their favorite characters. Dressing in such clothing is often called cosplay. Penrod says fans of almost everything are welcome.
I think it's a sense of community. It's a chance to be around people who have similar interests and people who really understand them and get them. It's a place to celebrate the things that you're passionate about.
Penrod chose to move the convention to the Mount Vernon Convention Center in Washington, D.C. in 2013. He hoped the larger space would bring more people. In 2015, over 40,000 people attended AwesomeCon. The number of people attending events like this shows how popular this kind of media is. Penrod suggests that any new television show or movie can succeed or fail because of the attention fans give. He also says more and more people are accepting nerdy culture.
I think nerdy is kind of becoming the new normal.
I'm Pete Musto.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.